And so he kind of starts off with one of the other good stories of the modern era, that would be the Godfather. And he says that many accuse the Calvinist God of being a divine Don Corleone. Free will theists charge Reformed theology with depicting God in exceptionally dignified tones, even though at the same time he dictates who is and who isn't viciously rubbed out. I think mixing a little 20s and 30s gangster with the 40s, 50s.
Yeah.
Perhaps he refrains from bloodying his own hands, but how does that distinguish him from an ordinary crime boss, right? I've never killed anybody. I've just, you know, Hitler never killed anybody,
right.
But all of a sudden we all want to blame Hitler for everything. How can he be exonerated from being the blameworthy instigator of evil?
Yeah.
Sounds so like a really good episode of a crime drama. Yeah.
So, and that's the central issue with regard to this particular chapter, right? How is God, you know, is God culpable for all the evil if indeed he's ultimately in charge, right? He says, as sufficient indicators demonstrate that God can sovereignly order the course of evil in this world without being culpable, that is, blamable, right, for wrongdoing. Sinister charges, he tells us, of malevolence concerning the divine character utterly fail. God, he says, bears no fault whatsoever. He is meticulously sovereign over every instance of evil, but remains emphatically free from being charged with guilt for it. So he says, let's examine the case for this bold assertion.
Right. So starting on page 202 here, we have the transcendent author of evil. So the providential model of God as the transcendent author of history, as we covered in chapter 7, presents an analogy by which God can easily be sovereign over evil without being morally culpable for it. But we must first dispense with the pejorative connotation of the word author, like author of evil, as assumed when discussing God and the problem of evil. So he says that while the Westminster Confession of Faith has antipathy towards the term, saying that God is not the author of sin, we should note that the reasonableness of this assertion gives, given the historical context of mid-17th century theology. So it's dealing with kind of the words that were used then, and so we shouldn't anarchistically read back into what we kind of assume that means.
Right.
So the Westminster Divines meant to indicate that God is not to be justifiably blamed for sin. He bears no moral responsibility for evil. He is not the doer of evil.
Right. So he's saying that's what they meant by saying that God is not the author of sin, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't bear the moral responsibility. Now, he moves from the Westminster, confession to John Frame, right? The theologian John Frame.
Right.
And he says John Frame draws out the analogy by pointing to Shakespeare, right? So how does Shakespeare help us? He says, well, when the famous playwright authors Macbeth, right, when he writes Macbeth, he authors Macbeth, he stands outside the story as the ultimate cause of everything taking place inside the story, and this includes the unsavory portions of the story, right? So Shakespeare is outside of the story, but, you know, he is, ultimately the cause of everything that's in the story. And so he says there are two then complete causal chains, and every event in Macbeth has two causes, two sets of necessary and sufficient conditions, the causes within the play itself and the intentions of Shakespeare.
Right. So Ophelia doesn't kill herself. Shakespeare does. So that's not a suicide. It's a murder. It's a murder by the author.
Well,
it's kind of bold.
Yeah.
And I like his assertion from Jonathan Edwards here. He says that if by the author of sin be meant the sinner, the agent or actor of sin, or the doer of wicked thing, so it would be a reproach and blasphemy to suppose God to be the author of sin. In this sense, I utterly deny God to be author of sin. But if it is the author of sin is meant to the permitter or not the hinderer of sin, and at the same time a disposer of the state of events in such a manner, for wise, holy, and most excellent ends of purpose, that sin, if it be permitted or not hindered, very, very, this is a Jonathan Edwards sentence that has 72 commas. So he goes on to say, I say this if it be meant, by being author of sin, I don't deny that God is the author of sin, though I dislike and reject the phrase. Mm. And so, again, here's Edwards dealing with that type of what does author of sin mean here?
Yeah.
And so we're going to kind of cover that a little bit more here.
So we're there.
So in one sense, Shakespeare made Macbeth kill Duncan, right? He not sat at his typewriter, but sat in his quill and ink and penned it out. So Shakespeare is the one that made Macbeth kill Duncan.
Made with quotes.
Right. But we don't attribute moral culpability to Shakespeare for Duncan's death. That belongs to Macbeth. So, it's been a while since I've read Macbeth, but, you know, why did he do it? He had reasons and it fit within the structure of the story. He didn't suddenly grow a laser out of his hand and start shooting Duncan. Well, why would that be? Well, that's outside, the character scope. And scope of the story. And if we were to read that, we would go, well, this is someone's penned in work, fan fiction of Macbeth. Doesn't belong. It doesn't fit with Macbeth's character. The primary agent, the author, is not liable for the crime. Rather, the secondary agent or the actor is. So Shakespeare is the primary agent. He's not liable for the crime of making Macbeth the killer. Right. Macbeth is the killer.
Right.
It's not, yeah. We don't attribute that to Shakespeare, even though he wrote it.
Right.
Thus seeing God's transcendence as analogous to the transcendence of an author considerably loosens the tension that scripture presents between his meticulous sovereignty and his impeccable goodness. And
right. So this kind of takes away some of the tension, right? It's he uses this analogy to kind of help us to see how God could be the author and yet not the one who is blameworthy, who is culpable of what happens, right? In the same way that an author writes, but the character in the story does the action.
Mm-hmm.
So God, who is the author, right, the ultimate one in charge, doesn't do the action. It's the person that does the action.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And so that's where you kind of get the disingenuous of like, oh, well, I'm just doing what God has made me do. Well, no, that's not what we're talking about.
Right.
And so we need to make sure we have our structure of our play in mind when we do that. So,
actually you're doing it because your nature is such in the same way that Macbeth's nature caused him to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Not that Shakespeare,
Right. Yeah. But like all analogies fail.
Yeah.
These are just characters on the page that have no moral agency or something. Well, sure. Right. All analogies fail. And whether here in theology, philosophy, whatever it might be. Yes, it's not I could not stand that when I talk to people and they were like, well, it doesn't really mean this in this situation, right? It's analogy. It's to help you get to thinking like here is an example of something where we have two authors of things, an author of action and an author who writes the entire story. So that's what we're talking about here. So Shakespeare is absolutely transcendent with respect to his literary creation. None of the characters in his plays have any idea that they are creations of a transcendent author. Shakespeare stands completely outside his stories. This is not true of God. God is not marked by absolute transcendence. He is both transcendent and immanent. He is independent of his creation, yet at the same time, he is part of the story he has crafted. In fact, he is its primary actor.
Right, he's the central actor in the story. Right. So that makes him different than, it was as if Shakespeare goes into the story and, becomes the hero.
Good sci-fi novels and shows that do that.
Yeah.